Okay, we ready to go, Reg? How you doing? How you doing? That's from Friends, right? Joey. I don't know. I never was a huge Friends fan. I know it's a phenomenon. I mean, it was right in my wheelhouse. You know, I'm around the same age as the actors on that show, but it just, you know, my idea, my sense of humor was Seinfeld, not Friends. You know what I mean? I just, it was too trendy. As I've said to you many times, you know, on this podcast, you know, if something is that popular, I always shy away from it. It's too trendy. I don't know. I still laugh at Seinfeld. I was watching some old episode. Do you ever watch Curb Your Enthusiasm? Oh, you got to watch that. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I really do relate to Larry David. All right. Anyway, let's get started with this thing. What do you say? Huh? Okay. You say okay? All right. So do I. All right, I like where the levels are, so keep them there. I'll give you the countdown on the three S's. You give me the music, and we'll just do this thing. What do you say? All right? Here we go. Star, smile strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Slow down. Sorry. You know what? I saw you looking at me. I just got into the music. Now, that's how you know that I am really an Elton John fan. Wow. I've heard that song a million times, if not more. And when it started, I just started listening instead of doing what I was supposed to do. I think you were shocked, weren't you? And then it just hit me, like, shouldn't I be talking now? All right, what do you say we try it again? And this time I'll do what I'm supposed to do. Wow, still excited by those songs of Elton John 50 years later. Wow, that song is 50 years old, in fact. Almost. Came out in 74. 49 years old. Still got to me. I was totally lost into it. I was totally lost in it. I didn't even think that I was supposed to be talking. I got a microphone in front of me, and I'm listening to music, totally enjoying it. All right, we'll try it again. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening is not the only thing you need to do if you listen to this podcast. You need to get out there and tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion, you can't buy that stuff. If you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and what will be spewing out is a river as long and wide and twisted as the Nile of podcasts for you to dive in and wade through and let them float into your consciousness. Wow, how's that, huh? There's so many podcasts in there, I can't even count anymore. Just keep scrolling down and scrolling down. I don't know if they're all there, but we've been doing this for almost 7 years now. And this is episode number 351. So what I'd like to talk to you about today is I'd like to share some exciting and thrilling and very rewarding news that I recently received. As I've said to you, if you listen to this podcast on a regular basis, I always consider this a conversation, a dialogue between you and me. Yes, many other people are also listening. But right now, most likely when you're listening to it, who knows, there's a good chance that just you and me are talking right now. Even though people have access to it all over the world and can listen to it anytime. So it's hardly just a one-on-one, but it really is. I really truly believe that it is a one-on-one because the nature of podcasts is the independence and the individuality that you have to listen to it at any time. Very different than mass broadcasts, like when you're on the radio live and hundreds of thousands or even millions of people could be listening at the same time. That's a completely different experience. I certainly treat it as if it's a conversation with just you, because right now, just me is in your head, is in your ears right now. And as I said, even though that those podcasts are sitting out there online and people can click on anytime, anywhere they want, there's a good chance that whenever you're listening, it's just the two of us. So as I said, I'd like to consider this as a dialogue, a conversation between two people. And I have always tried to share interesting things that have happened to me personally, as well as certainly talking about big topics and universal themes and things that we all might deal with or might confront us in the news or in life. But every so often, I do like to get a little personal and share things about my life. Some of you really enjoy some of those quirky things about my personality. We all have those little quirky things, and some of many people don't expose those. They don't let people know about that because they're embarrassing. I'm kind of an open book here, and so I enjoy sharing those things. And it's funny that when I do, I find that even though many people don't want to admit that they do some of these things, when someone else talks about them and puts them out there, then all of a sudden people sort of sheepishly raise their hand too. And that's fine. That's cool. That's fun. I enjoy doing that. And as I said, I enjoy also sharing my opinions, but also sharing some great and interesting things that happen to me personally. And not everything. I mean, I do keep some things personal, but this, I think, is something that I'm so proud of that I want to share with you, because I do consider us friends. And so you always want to share good news with a good friend. And about a week and a half or so ago, I got some just, you know, jaw-dropping news. In a good way. In a good way. I'm pretty sure I should go back. I talk at the beginning of the podcast about, you know, you should always listen to the past podcast so you know what we're going. Listen to the past so you know where we're going in the future. I'm almost positive I did speak about this. I need to check. I should have checked before I talked about this. But and once again, I don't get me wrong. I do research for this podcast every week, but sometimes things just pop into my head as I'm speaking, as you could tell. but I'm almost positive that I talked about this this play that I did last summer that I was very proud of, and I'm even more if that's possible, I'm even more proud almost a year later, if that is possible. And it's because I did a play, a classic play, here in the Chicago area. The play was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's written by one of America's best playwrights, Edward Albee. It was a Tony Award-winning play. It won a Pulitzer Prize, and it was made into a film. It has won many, many accolades. It's considered one of the best American-written plays of all time. I've been acting now for 20 years. In fact, this year is the first play that I ever did, straight official play that I ever did. I've been performing for most of my life. As a little kid, I was doing impersonations and I shouldn't say it's my first play. I shouldn't say that. The first play I ever did was in second grade. I was Father Marquette of the Father Marquette Marquette and Joliet Explorer fame, and I played Father Marquette in second grade. Even then, I had a lead role. But I've been performing, and I consider this a performance in many ways, being on the radio, and I've been on television and things like that. So I've always been kind of, as I said, doing impersonations. And if I'm at, you know, in a gathering, I many times will be called to give a speech or to, you know, entertain. So I've always considered myself a performer in one way or another. But I had never been an actor, per se. I'd never been in a legitimate play where you had to memorize lines and do blocking and act with other people. I never had done that. I always thought about doing it, but I never did it. When I was in high school, I was in an all-boys school, and this was in the, you know, the early 80s, and so I was more of a jock. It wasn't cool to be in the theater group, and at my high school at the time, they had a very loose theater department anyway. With all boys, they had a cooperative with many of the girls' schools and things like that. But they didn't really have a major theater, and there wasn't real a lot of emphasis on the theater. Sadly, there were plays. And I probably could have done them, but I just, you know, I was so wrapped up in that time in sports. I played, a couple of sports, baseball and football, and I even played a year of basketball when I was a freshman. So I was very active in sports at that time. But I always did notice and look at and wonder about auditioning for a play. You know what's funny is like the teachers in the theater department, they never came up to me and asked me. If they had asked me, I may have done it, but perhaps they just thought, oh, you know, he's a jock and that's what he is. Even though, I mean, I was always, you know, had a big personality even in high school. And so I was, you know, I would do things at, the assemblies and stuff like that. So I never was shy, that's for sure, and I always put myself out there, but they never really asked. Maybe if they asked me, I would have done it, if I could have, in terms of scheduling, but I was pretty busy with sports and everything, for the most part. And even when I was in college, there was a play, they had a theater there. Once again, it wasn't a huge theater department. I went to Elmhurst College, now it's called Elmhurst University, mainly because they had a radio station there, and I wanted to learn how to do radio. I've been obsessed with being on the radio since I was a little kid, since I was 12 years old. And so that was the direction I wanted to go in, and I was very focused on that. And maybe I overlooked other abilities and talents and even other ambitions because I was so dominated by that. And here I am today talking to you on a podcast. But, you know, once again, my main goal always was to be on the radio, the mass communications radio. And I still enjoy that the most. But I have to tell you, after this news I got this week, I might have to rethink how I consider myself. So I might as well just, if you haven't heard it yet, I have it on my Facebook page, but I thought I would talk about a little more in depth. But The production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was very successful. It was done at a small theater here in Chicago called Invictus. And when I auditioned for it, I always wanted to play the role of George in this play. I'd seen the film with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. I had seen theater productions of it, most recently about maybe 10 years or so ago, here in Chicago, produced by the great and legendary Steppenwolf Theater with Tracy Letts and Amy Morgan in the main, or Amy Morton, I'm sorry, in the main roles. And I always was intrigued by it. It's a bear of a play for both the audience and for the actors. It touches on so many different swirling emotions and personal and intimate details and circumstances and many emotional layers going on. A play about a very dysfunctional relationship and marriage between George and Martha, and how it all unravels in many ways, or at least is exposed in a late night, early morning, drunken frenzy with another couple, and their feelings and their insecurities and their tempers and their angers and their lust and every emotion you can think of is on display. And it's a very powerful piece that stays with you if it's done right. And the film version certainly is the first exposure that I had to it. And Elizabeth Taylor, who won an Academy Award for her role, and Richard Burton, who was nominated for an Academy Award in his role, were just impossible to ignore. Their acting ability, but also their own chemistry, because you know they were a couple at the time, just made it feel so real and so powerful. And it's not easy to get through. It's long. The play itself is over 3 hours. But the gratifying thing about it was our production was when I was, after every show, I would hear people talking not only after the show, but weeks after, saying, I just can't get that out of my mind. There was so many issues that went on there. And I was talking with people that we saw it with, and we're still trying to figure things out. So that was very satisfying. I auditioned for the role. When I saw that there was an audition for it, I got very excited. And I said, wow, this is something that I've always wanted to do, and now here is the opportunity. And so I studied for the audition, and I went in with a lot of confidence, because I knew I had to, because that's what the character called for. And I was lucky enough to have two audition partners who I'd never met or worked with before, but they were there to read the female role against me, with me. And they were both excellent, and they both really gave me a lot to work with. And so I feel that I was able to really put my best foot forward acting wise as I was trying to find my own version of George. And I really enjoy, basically, when I saw there was an audition for this show, I just said to myself, well, I don't know if I can, I will get this role, but at the very least, I wanted to go to the audition so I could at least do a couple of scenes and say I did a couple of scenes as George with somebody, in front of other people, even if it was three or four people looking to cast. It wasn't an audience, but at least I could read Albie's lines and be George for 5 minutes. And it turned out I wound up being George through rehearsals and our run for 3 months. And I think there's always a little bit of George still in me. There may have been some George in me before I started, which I didn't know, but I certainly miss playing him, and I miss being with George, that character who was both in me as well as with me. And I helped bring him to life for others. But I really had no idea, you know, I knew that there'd be a lot of competition for this. If you're a male actor, this is one of the roles you want to play. It was always one of my dream roles. And the play isn't done all that often because it's so difficult and because it's very heavy and it's 3 hours long. And in today's world, people don't have that type of an attention span. Although what I did learn, we say that so casually today. Oh, no one has an attention span today. Young people don't have an attention span. Older people don't have an attention span. But you know what? If you give them something to pay attention to, people do have a sustained and long attention span. And I think I learned that by doing this show, because this show is over 3 hours with two intermissions. And no one walked out. And everyone who saw it said that they were gripped from the beginning and saying how they just could not stop watching. So I think that's a cop-out really now. And I've certainly said that many times. Oh, well, we have this low attention span. Maybe because there's nothing to pay attention to. That's our problem. The content doesn't deserve a long attention span. Maybe that's the equation. At least for the people who came to our show, they came wanting that and expecting it, and they completely went along with it. But I never heard anyone say that. I mean, I talked to a lot of people after the shows, and everybody seemed to be very united in their reaction to the show. And not just people that I knew. These were strangers who would come up to me. So it was very fulfilling to do this part. I learned a lot about myself. I grew as an actor. There's no question about that. I've been acting for 20 years in various productions, both professional and amateur. I've done more than 40 plays in 20 years, so that's a pretty good clip. I mean, I have to really go back and count them. It might even be closer to 50. And I've been fortunate enough to play many of the roles that I always wanted to play, that I always admired. As I said, I never acted until kind of late in life. I wasn't one of those theater rats in high school or college. Most people are into theater in their younger years, and they do it in high school, they do it in college, and then they get out of college and they start to pursue an acting career. As I said before, I pursued a radio career or a media career, and so that wasn't my thing. But what was interesting, and the way I came to acting, through a back door, really, I always had this interest in it. I always maybe thought in the back of the mind I could do it, but I don't know if I either had the confidence to do it, and I never really had someone that really pushed me toward it. And because it's such a difficult profession, I certainly didn't have my parents. I mean, my parents, you know, they always supported me or whatever I did, but as every parent, they were always worried about your long-term security and your job security. And so acting certainly was something that I think they probably saw that I could do, but they didn't really push me in that direction because of the fact that it is so hit and miss, and the odds of succeeding in it are you know, very large. And even when you do succeed in it, it still can be very temporary and up and down, unless you hit the jackpot and get on a TV show and make millions, then you're set. But, working actors are always looking for that next role. It's an interesting profession, and it's an interesting vocation, because the odds are against you. The jobs can be, as I said before, very temporary, even in this. I mean, at the end of the run, the show is over, and you're off looking for your next thing. So to really... And that's why so many actors, you know, they're actors by night, and they're waiters and dog walkers and temps and whatever it is, because they have to make a living, And acting is not, and I think there's some crazy statistic that like 5% of the actors in the Screen Actors Guild, you know, are regularly employed. It's crazy. But what's also difficult is there's so much reality in front of you about the hardships of it. But if you have that passion for it that burns in you, it lives in you, that I think that you're born with, despite all those realities, it's something that you have to do. And I, if you don't have that kind of creative bent or that kind of creative spark that lives in you like that, it's hard to explain. I've got many friends that they're in the business world, accountants and other things, and I've been in the business world too. Don't get me wrong. As I said, I've always been focused on radio, which is still a creative outlet, but it's still, there's more of a business to it. But acting is certainly more of an artistic kind of a venture. And, it's not like being an accountant. There's no path, you know, there's so much luck and just being at the right time, at the right place, so many things that go into it. It's crazy. And yet if you have that passion in you, you may try to play it down and you may try to bury it because of the realities. Economic as well, you know, and things like that. But I find that those people that do have that acting bug, you might be able to push it away for a while, but it will always reemerge. And that's what happened to me. Maybe it was always there and I don't know it or didn't realize it, or I was focused on other things, but clearly it was there and it is there now. It is here. And so we did this play. I was very proud of it. I worked my butt off. There was a ton of lines. The show was over 3 hours long. I maybe was off stage for 5 minutes, and I'm not even exaggerating. A lot of lines, a lot of things to just have to know and learn. I was up many times for weeks at a time during rehearsals. I was up at 3 a.m, and I was going over these lines for 12 hours sometimes before I would go to rehearsals. I'm not exaggerating. I really put a lot of work and effort into this because I knew how important this was. It was a goal of mine to always do. So when I was cast, I was so excited, and I knew there was a great challenge in front of me, but I wanted to meet that challenge. And I felt a great responsibility, and it may sound corny, but I felt a great responsibility to do my best and to do proud by this play and those who have done it before me. I really felt that responsibility. I was going to be in this play and I was going to be performing it for people. And anytime that I do anything, I always wanted to be my best and do my best. And this would be a test, I felt. It would be testing my abilities and my dedication and my focus and my commitment because of the size of it and all the layers, as I said before, about emotion and acting and just picking apart any of the craft or the process of it. It demanded all of that. And I also saw the opportunity for it. As I said, I came to acting late, but I was always interested in it, and I never took an acting class, but I learned by observing. When I was early in my career, I was a film and theater writer and reviewer. So I went to a lot of movies and a lot of plays in the early part of my life for the first, I was watching movies and television since a little kid, and watching those performers like Jackie Gleason and Groucho Marx and so many people that I enjoyed, and Woody Allen and actors, you know, like Marlon Brando and Paul Newman and Robert De Niro, and Anthony Hopkins and Richard Burton, and so many people, Patrick Stewart, so many people that I really admired. And then I was going to plays and watching actors, and I was going to plays as a young kid. My parents took me to the theater many times, so I saw these people that I saw on TV, then suddenly I saw them in person acting on stage. I saw many of them. There used to be a theater at the Arlington Park Hilton, and we would go there quite a bit to see different shows, and the Drury Lane theaters and the Ivanhoe theater. So I've been going to theater, you know, all my life. And through osmosis, I think I was really learning from them. So many people say, well, you know, what kind of acting, you know, training have you had? And I trained not from an acting teacher, but I trained by watching some of the greatest actors and actresses who have ever done it. And because when I had to review a play, I had to look close. Or I reviewed a movie, I had to look close at the performances. How effective were these actors in portraying these? Did I believe them? Did I see any false notes? Or was I completely bought into and completely convinced that they were those people? So I had to watch with a keen eye to do my job. But personally, I was also looking with a very close eye and absorbing that. And so when it came time to do it, it came very natural to me. When I was in high school, we had a project in one of our classes, in our English class, to make a movie. And once again, here as I say, oh, I never pursued it, but I wrote and whatever this means, directed, and with my other classmates, starred in this small little film. And you know, it was probably 15, 20 minutes long. But there were some moments in it where there were some real moments. I watch it now. I still have it. You know, it's how many years ago? Decades ago. And I look at myself as an 18-year-old kid, and I see the potential there. You know, I see those scenes and go, that's not a bad scene for an 18-year-old. So obviously the talent was the ability was there, and I've certainly worked on it, but there was a lot that maybe I just, I through my own observations, you know, there was a raw talent there, and maybe I helped refine it by myself. And then when I started to act, I certainly, by working with different actors and directors, I have learned on the job different techniques and different things. So certainly I'm a much better actor, I believe, today than I was 20 years ago, or certainly when I was 18. And so that bug was there. Maybe I just never fully appreciated it or fully let it rise to the front. And interestingly enough, what made it happen was, there is just no question about this. This isn't like, well, you know, this is the impetus for it. And I may have told the story before, but it's worth repeating. So that film I'm telling you about in high school that we made for a class project, we filmed it at one of my friend's house. In fact, I'm still friends with him. In fact, I'm his son's godfather. And we still are best of friends since high school. And but we filmed it at his house mainly because his brother had a video camera. This is the early 80s when camcorders were just becoming. But they had a big family, and they used to go out on a lot of, you know, they did a lot of stuff in there. And his brother, his older brother, was really into, you know, filming and being a photographer. So he actually filmed it on their camcorder, which was at that time a big, huge thing that you put on the side of your shoulder. But we made that play over, we did that movie over a couple of weeks at my friend's house. So flash forward, you know, 30 years, you know, well, no, 20 years, fast forward 20 years. And we were at a party, at a barbecue at my friend's house. And I hadn't seen his mother in a long time. I always got along very well with her, and she always liked me. And as I said, we filmed this movie there, and being her grandson's godfather, I was certainly around at their family functions frequently and things like that. And they were always very welcoming and always very nice to me. And I hadn't seen her in a while. And she said, "Oh, you know, how are you doing? What are you up to now?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm doing in public relations. I'm doing some radio work." And she just looked at me and she said, "You know, I always thought you would be a great actor." And I just kind of laughed, because I had never pursued that, right? But she saw me in this play, in this movie that we filmed at her house, and she must have still remembered it. Maybe because she saw that how I was outgoing and always kind of, you know, performing, as I said before, when people were around. But there was something that made her say that. And I kind of laughed, but when she said it, it really hit me. I remember almost taking a step back, like, wow, for the first time, somebody actually said it. Many people may have thought it, but she said it, and she said it to me in a way that was almost kind of a challenge. At least that's the way I took it. I don't know if she even realized it or not. But when she said it, she almost said it like a regretful thing, like, "It's too bad you never pursued acting," because I think, you know, that's the way that I took it. Maybe, once again, this was psychologically in the back of my mind. Maybe I heard it the way I needed or wanted to hear her say it. I don't know. She's passed away now, and I wish she was around, because I would have loved to have shared this news with her. Really, there's a lot of people that I would have loved to have shared this news with. And she is one of them, certainly, because I don't think I would be acting today if not for Rose Minogue telling me, "I always thought you'd be a great actor." It hit me so hard. I kind of laughed and, well, yeah, you know. And, you know, we just moved on. It stayed in my head, and it bothered me, because I have always pursued what I've wanted to and what I've always had a passion for. And at that point in my life, it was almost like, you know, if I don't do this now, I may never do it. And maybe I need to do this. Maybe I should have done it. And if I should have, well, I can't change the past, but I could change the future. And so that was in July when she told me that. And it just haunted me. It stayed with me to the point where I said to myself, "I really think that I want to audition for a play." I had never done that in my life. And so I was a little afraid, but I was also very excited about the prospect. And once again, she inspired me to gain this confidence. And so I went online and I started to look for local area auditions and plays. And I saw an amateur production that was going to have some auditions for a production of A Christmas Carol. And because in September now, you know, now this was kind of like, you know, August, September, that's when the Christmas plays start to come together. It takes
couple of months to prepare, and then they're usually, you know, they start in early to mid-November and go through the Christmas season. So in the fall, that's when the Christmas plays start to cast, many of them. So I thought, well, that's not a bad idea. I mean, I know A Christmas Carol so well. It's my favorite Christmas story. There's a lot of great characters. I'd love to play Scrooge. 20 years later, I would still love to play Scrooge. I'm still wanting to play Scrooge. That's another one of those that I definitely want to play. Haven't played Scrooge yet. Played almost everybody else in A Christmas Carol. Haven't played Scrooge yet. Maybe I just need to be a little older, but maybe I'm getting there now. So I said, well, this might be a good thing to do because this is a piece that I'm comfortable with. I know the characters. It's not as if I had to create a new character. This is an established character that I've seen performed many, many times. There's so many different versions of A Christmas Carol, and I've seen many of them. So I felt comfortable in either auditioning for Scrooge or another major part in that, whether it was Bob Cratchit or Marley's Ghost or some of these other characters. So I saw this, and it was in a suburban amateur theater in Wheaton called Wheaton Drama, and I went, and I had never auditioned. I certainly had been performing for many years, for practically my whole life, but I'd never been in a formal audition for a play until this time. And I auditioned, and while I didn't get Scrooge, there's only five roles in this production of A Christmas Carol, a very unique production, where everybody played multiple roles. And I got one of those five roles. Having never been in a play, having never auditioned for a show, I got one of those. And I had to play several different characters. Marley's Ghost, Bob Cratchit, Mr. Fezziwig, and some other smaller, minor parts that just, you know, little quick scenes. But I was being called upon to play, have a diversity and a versatility. Never really acted, never really had done this before, but given a major responsibility, a major part, and only, you know, five actors. So every one of them has to be pretty good or this is going to fail. But I must have shown something in that audition. And I got it, and I jumped head first into it. And I, from the first rehearsal, I felt so comfortable and so much in my element. Almost more. I always felt very comfortable and in my element when I'm in a radio studio and behind a microphone. And I felt the same way here in this rehearsal setting, acting, reading the script, and performing in rehearsal. And doing all the things you have to do. And I was trying my best not to show my inexperience or my lack of knowledge of acting. But it must have just come to me because no one ever really questioned it. They helped me and they directed me, which is the job. They helped refine me, but I seemed to be able to do it pretty well. And by the way I was acting, nobody was saying, well, this guy has never done this before. Why did he get this role? Everybody was, from the get-go, saying, wow, you're doing a great job. And that just boosted my confidence. And after doing that play, I said, well, this is something that I certainly want to pursue. Maybe not professionally or full-time, but I certainly something that I want to be in more plays. And why wasn't I doing this before? But maybe I just wasn't ready. But I certainly wanted to make up for lost time. And I said, in the last 20 years, I've been in probably more than 40 and almost 50 plays. So I've certainly made up for lost time. And I've been fortunate enough to play many of the dream roles that I've always wanted to play. I've been fortunate enough to get many of those and experience those and put my own mark on those. And I've been very grateful for the reaction that my performances have gotten. But I got floored, and it's not easy to floor me. I don't get rattled that much. I've been very fortunate. I've put myself out there, and I've been able to do a lot of things I've always wanted to do, at least experience them. They haven't maybe, you know, I mean, if I had my druthers, I would have been on the radio for the last 40 years. Well, that didn't happen. But I have been on, and I was on regularly, and I think I did a very good job, and the ratings proved it when I was on the afternoon show on WGN daily for 6 years. And I certainly wish I was still doing that. But, hey, that's the rate of the world. But my point is I've been very lucky and I've been very fortunate, but I've also put in the time and the work. And I've always had a great confidence. And so when I've achieved many of the goals or the dreams that I've always had, I feel almost like, well, that was what I was supposed to do. But acting, it was never in my mind like that. So this has all been something kind of new to me. And I've gotten very confident in my acting ability. And I think you have to be confident or you wouldn't get cast. But when I got this news recently, it really did shake me. In fact, I'll be honest with you, it's been over a week and a half since I got the news. And I still haven't completely digested it. And I still haven't completely been able to get my arms around it. I don't know how I feel, except I'm excited by it. I don't know what it means or what it could be. I don't know. But I got this role in Virginia Woolf, and I put everything, literally everything I had into it. And I enjoyed it. I had great castmates. It was only four people in that play. So once again, every one of them, you know, each one of us had to be at the top of our game, because there was three hours of four people just interacting and talking. There wasn't any laser beams. There wasn't any explosions. There wasn't any songs. This was just acting and talking. And there's some action going on, obviously, but you had to be compelling. And when I met my three castmates at the first rehearsal, I could see how committed and talented and focused they were. And I knew that I had to really raise my game up, and I had to really bring my A-plus game, because I had such a major role in this that I had to deliver or this play would fail. The part was too big and too important to the action. And I had to deliver. I had to bring everything I had and more. And then when I saw how good they were, Andrea Upling and Rachel Livingston and Keenan Odenkirk, when I saw how good they were and how committed and focused and determined they were, boy, that I just knew I had to up my game. And that's why I was up at 3 a.m. every day reading these lines. Because when I came to rehearsal, and our director, Charles Askenizer, who was demanding, supportive, but demanding and compassionate and passionate about this. And I didn't want to let him down. He really went out on a limb to cast me. This is a big role. And he didn't cast somebody he had worked with before that he knew how they acted. I had never met him. I had never been in anything that he saw me in. He just saw me in that audition. And he had the trust to put this show, which would be very important for the theater itself, in a great part in my hands. And I did not take that responsibility lightly. I realized the responsibility on many levels that this play and this role had for so many people, including myself. And I was determined to live up to those expectations of others and the high expectations I have for myself. And he could have easily, you know, cast somebody he's worked with before who he knew and had confidence in, and I don't blame him if he did. But he saw something in me, and he was willing to give me that responsibility. And I did not want to let him down. I did not want to let my castmates down. I did not want to let Edward Albee and this play down. I did not want to let George, the character, down. I didn't want to let Richard Burton and Tracy Letts and Arthur Hiller, or no, Arthur Hill, who was the original George, and Bill Irwin, who won a Tony Award for this on Broadway as well as Tracy Letts did. I didn't want to let Richard Burton down, who got an Academy Award nomination. I didn't want to let down the previous people who had done this show. I didn't want to let the audience down. I didn't want to let anyone down. And so I worked my butt off to make sure that I was at my best and meeting or matching and hopefully at times even exceeding the great performances that my castmates were giving. And hopefully I was giving back to them something to work off of that they were giving to me to work off of. It was truly a collaborative effort between those four castmates and our director and our producer, everybody involved. It was just a very special show. Early on in the rehearsals, we all felt that something special was happening. We had the set design, which also got nominated, was excellent. Everybody felt that something special was happening. And when we finally did it for an audience, we got that reaction. And then it just built and built and built. And it was one of the best theater experiences, one of the best professional experiences, one of the best personal experiences of my life. And so when I got this news, it was a great validation. It was so fulfilling. It was exciting. It was a dream. It was a dream come true. And for me, it was a reward for all that work that I did put into it, that I'm not afraid to say. And in the back of my mind, yes, I always hoped that maybe this would really elevate me as an actor and recognition for the work I've done. Because I really did believe, I was very proud of this show in every way, and I was very proud of my performance. I'm not afraid to say that. And thankfully, many people that I know came to see it. I was glad that those people did, and I was very complimented that strangers came up to me and told me how much they enjoyed my performance. We got rave reviews, critical acclaim in the media, which was fantastic, as well as the audience reaction. We got standing ovations almost every night, if not every night, which really meant something, that all that work was worth it. Because ultimately, I care about entertaining the audience. I was an audience member before I was an actor. You know, a lot of actors don't, you know, they don't know what it's like to be in the audience. Because acting can be a very narcissistic and personal thing. And many people do it just because they love to do it. And the audience is kind of like a necessary evil. But I was an audience member long before I was an actor. So I know what audiences expect when they come to a show or a movie. I know what they're looking for. They're looking for something. They want to be entertained. They want to be engrossed. They want to be with you. I feel a great responsibility to the audience when I'm on stage. Yes, I'm getting personal satisfaction out of this, but I am working hard to entertain the audience. I was there before. I was one of them before I was on the other side of the stage, on the other side of the curtain. I was in that audience, and I know why people go to entertainment, for what it does for them, and what they're looking for, and when they're disappointed. And I never want to I know when I've walked out of a show been disappointed. I never wanted to do that.
So I'm very committed and very focused on making sure whatever I do, at the end of the day, I'm doing it for the audience first and me second. And I can honestly say that. And that's why I'm so proud of the show, because that's the way I certainly approach this. As I said, I felt a great responsibility to many outside forces, as well as to myself. And so, about a week and a half ago, I got some news that just floored me, that I still haven't been able to fully comprehend. And I've, every day, I guess I am a little more, but I still don't know what to say or how to react. Because in the back of my mind, I said, boy, wouldn't it be great if the show got recognized award-wise in the Chicago theater community? In the Chicago theater community, there is the award. It's called the Joseph Jefferson Awards, or they're called the Jeff Awards. And they are similar to the Tony Awards for Broadway shows, the best in theater in the United States. They're similar to the Olivier Awards in Britain and the West End. They are similar to the Oscars, the Academy Awards in the motion picture industry. They're similar to the Emmy Awards in television. Now, obviously, this is just locally in Chicago. It's not national or international, but it's still the highest awards in the Chicago theater. If you're in Chicago theater, you know, the highest honor you could get is a Jeff Award. And maybe, hopefully, you go on to other things. But if you do a play in Chicago, your goal is to be recognized for a Jeff. And our play did get Jeff Award recommended, which means that the committee members of the Jeff Awards came to our show and officially recommended our show, which is a huge designation, which helped, I think, bring in audience and also may have helped in the show being recognized, certainly. And that was a high honor. Just to be Jeff recommended is not easy. And so when our show on after opening night got a Jeff recommendation stamp, we were like, wow, this is really cool. But that was surpassed a year later almost with the news of about a week and a half ago. And I'm so proud to say that the Jeff Award nominations for the non-equity plays in Chicago for 2022 our production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf got 7 nominations, which is really good. And we got it for Best Play, which you can't, that's like being the Best Picture nomination. We got it for Best Ensemble, which is very exciting for me because that means the four of us who worked so hard together, and we had an immediate chemistry and spark, and we hopefully inspired each other. I know how they inspired me. So to know that was recognized, that how good the four of us worked together, that's a real important nomination for me. Our director, Charles Askenizer, was nominated, as he deservedly should have been, for pulling this whole thing together visually and acting and every aspect. He's so committed and so passionate. And it's there. It was there on that stage every night. And as I said, I know that I personally and those of us in the cast, we wanted to make sure that we matched Charles's expectations, high standards, and his passion, his commitment, and his focus to be the best we can be. And we try to do that every night. My co-star, my Martha, if you will, who played my wife, Andrea Upling, was nominated for Best Performer in a play, in a drama. My other cast member, Rachel Livingston, was nominated for a Best Supporting Role. Our scenic designer, the great, everything takes place in one room
in this one apartment. And the apartment is a character as much as the four people. And our scenic designer, Kevin Rolfs, did an amazing job. When we walked into that set every day and every performance, it just inspired us. And he was nominated. And as incredibly as it may sound, and I'm still trying to get my arms around this, but I was nominated for Best Performer in a principal role in a drama for my portrayal of George. I can't tell you how excited I am, how proud I am, how fulfilling it feels. It's to be acknowledged some of the best actors in Chicago. And I don't want to downplay this. Say, oh, well, it's just a local Chicago thing. Chicago theater is among the best theater in this country. There is Broadway, and that is in New York, and that is the pinnacle of theater in this country, no question. But Chicago theater is a very close second. Many of the best actors we see today in plays, on television, and on Broadway, and in films were from Chicago, trained in Chicago, and acted in Chicago, and did get Jeff awards. John Malkovich, Gary Sinise, Joe Mantegna, Dennis Farina, Dennis Franz, Amy Morton, Joan Allen. The list just goes on and on and on. From places, great theaters like The Goodman and Steppenwolf. Great outside actors who came to Chicago have won Jeff Awards, like Brian Dennehy and others. Chicago theater is a thriving, well-respected theater community in this country, if not the world. Chicago plays have gone to other countries. They've gone to London with those actors. They've excelled on Broadway. They've excelled at the highest acting areas. Laurie Metcalf from Roseanne. The irony is Laurie Metcalf was in a production of Virginia Woolf. I had tickets to see it long before. This was during COVID, right before COVID. I had tickets to see Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with Laurie Metcalf in the role as Martha, which would have been amazing. I hope that she still revisits someday. And sadly, when it was in previews, when COVID hit and it was canceled and it never came back. Hopefully schedules can be worked around, because that show is up on its feet. It was already in previews. It was supposed to open in April, and then sadly in March, everything closed down. But Laurie Metcalf, another one. So many great actors have started in Chicago and have won Jeff Awards. Many of them haven't either. So this is a big deal. I don't mind saying that. And I don't know if I belong in their class, but it's nice to know that I at least in some way belong in their company. I have worked so hard as an actor. And I've never really, and I mean, I consider myself an actor, but I've always in my mind considered myself, you know, a radio personality. Oh, and I also do some acting. But after this, I think I've been downplaying my acting, perhaps. I don't know. But I think I'm going to start referring to myself as an actor. Because I do feel a part of that, as I said, I might not be a part of the club. And there's some great actors that have won these awards, have been nominated for these awards, but at least, or I don't know if in their class, but I'm certainly in the club. And on March 27th, the ceremony for the 2022 Non-Equity Jeff Awards will take place here in Chicago at the Park West. And we're nominated for 7 of them. And in a way, I'm nominated for at least 2. Not only the performer on my own, but it's part of the best ensemble. So at least I'm nominated for 2 awards. So hopefully I come home with some kind of hardware. You know, they do say that it's an honor to be nominated, and you hear people say that, and it sounds so corny and so fake, but it really is true. Now that I'm in that situation, I can honestly say I am just honored to have been recognized and nominated. And there are many people in the best performer category. It's not like, you know, five and five or so like they have in the Oscars like that. There's everybody. In fact, I'm up against my in the competition, if you will, against my co. The actors and actresses are both in one category. So there's about 10 or 15 people in this list. I'm not sure how many for sure. I have to count that now. But so we'll see. But the fact that my name is there and will always be there is quite a thrill. And at this stage of my life, and at this after 20 years of acting, it's a very fulfilling recognition and reward that all the time and the effort and the miles that I've driven and the hours that I've put in somehow have paid off. It's great to be nominated, but I won't lie to you. It's better to win. I would like to bring home some hardware that night. And I do wish that there were a lot of people here with us still that I could have shared this news with. Rosemarie Minogue, certainly. She was the one, by a simple comment that she doesn't even, maybe she never even realized how important that comment was. But for me, it was almost life-changing. I'd love for my parents to have been here, especially my mom, who was a great lover of the arts. She was my biggest fan and my biggest critic, which you need to have if you're going to be good at anything, because you always need to be striving. You can never get lazy. And I know that she was proud, and I know that I brought her spirit, which lives very deep in me, even though she's been gone for almost 17 years now. I brought her with me every show, and I always felt that she was in that audience, and I always performed for her and the other people in that audience. So I certainly share this great honor with her. So I'm very touched. I'm very moved. I'm very excited. I'm very confused. I am wondering, am I worthy of this? I don't know. But I'm glad to be acknowledged. It's a great, great feeling. And I'm so appreciative. And for anybody who's come to see me in any of my plays, thank you so much for your support. It's because of you that I keep doing it. But I'm so proud of this show. It was a special moment in my life and in my career. And I hope that we can at least win one, so that we know that our hard work really was validated. It's validated now, don't get me wrong, but it's always nice to hear your name announced. So I'll let you know what happens on March 27th, but I just wanted to let you know of the exciting and thrilling and personally satisfying and rewarding news that I got this week. And I hope that you enjoyed the little backstory of that. And I appreciate and enjoyed sharing that with you. As I said before, I consider you great friends. And when you have some good news, you share it with your great friends. And I talk to you every week. So let me just say, how cool is this? And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody you know who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 351. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web
to your screen. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Virginia Woolf, Virginia Woolf.